When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun,
a Sopranos podcast where Vince and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. We get into every, you know, we talk about the themes, we talk about the art, we talk about the music, we talk about the scripting. We do, we're just really
color
good.
Color theory, Freudian color analysis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are the world's only Sopranos podcast that exists, and we thank you so much for listening to it. Very excited about our guest today. You might know him from the Male Gaze podcast or Dark Weeb podcast. Our guest is Brody Reed.
What's
How
up,
you
guys?
Doing?
Congrats on being the only Sopranos podcast.
Yeah,
thank you.
It feels
congrats
good,
to
man.
You for being a guest on the only Sopranos
podcast.
Oh,
man,
ever.
Thank you so much. I was hoping that you guys would mention that.
Dude, it's a big deal because, you know, we've had so many listeners. Speaking of which, if you're listening to this podcast, we would love it if you would go to the iTunes store and give us 5 stars and leave a review. Because like I said, every time I do this podcast, it helps with the algorithm. People got to know. So if you do that, then it helps us. and then we get to eat. So that's kind of nice. So Brody, you are a comedian in Los Angeles.
Allegedly, for sure.
Allegedly. At one point, we were all once comedians.
Yeah.
Live on stage. Before we decided to do podcasting only because coronavirus has ravaged.
We all got pivoted to video.
Yeah, we all got pivoted, dude. You're also one of the guests that we have that has not seen every single episode of The Sopranos. Is that right?
No, that is absolutely true. I started the show during the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh.
And then I got exactly as far as maybe like 3 episodes after this episode. I warned you when you asked me to do it. I was like, oh, I've only seen like this many seasons, and then you showed me this episode, and I was just like, oh, this one's fresh in my mind. So this is actually one that I like. So
this worked out perfectly. Yeah. Well,
so far, what I can tell from this show is that it's very wacky, way wackier than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
It's almost like a Twin Peaks level of wacky. It just seems like this show is like 25% like car crashes and 25% dream sequences, and then the rest is just like Tony like sneaking meat.
Yeah. Oh, strap in. There's gonna be way more dream sequences further on down the line.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot more dream sequences and a lot more meat-based dream sequences. So shit's gonna get real. You just gotta stick with it.
Look, his front business is a pork store. What are you gonna do?
Yes.
Well, hey, what are you gonna do?
Hey, gabagoo.
Hey, forget about it. Before we get into the episode, I would be remiss if we did not play the Sopranos Pod Yourself a Gun theme song.
Uh-oh.
Pod. Pod. Pod.
Genius.
Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast.
Oh, who did that?
Oh, that was me, dude. I've been learning how to audio edit ever since we started this podcast.
Dude, I didn't know you were a musician.
Yeah. No, I do a lot of remixes, you know. Yeah, it's pretty sick. It's a sick life. I'm thinking of starting a SoundCloud.
Yeah, man. Be like Girl Talk.
Dude, freaking Girl Talk, that is one of my biggest inspirations. It's like, what if you put one thing and put another thing next to it and see if they make sense? and then usually they don't, but it's okay because it's art.
This is the second Pod Yourself a Gun episode in a row to mention Girl Talk. So we're off to a good start already.
Yeah, well, that's
big cultural influence.
Uh-huh. Big cultural, especially on this podcast. But yeah, so today we are talking about from season 3, episode 2, Proshai Livushka.
Proshai Livushka.
Livushka. Thank you so much. Which means, what is it? Like, thanks. Bye. Oh, bye, little Livia.
It's a special goodbye. It's it's a very specific kind of goodbye. It's called the forever goodbye. There's actually not a literal English translation to it. It's basically like you only really say it to dead people. Or
it's like the bye Felicia of death for the Polish.
Yeah, it's God saying bye Felicia. Or I guess you go to meet God. So maybe it'd be
he would be saying. Like a high Felicia.
Yeah.
Either way, Felicia's dead, and that's what this episode is about. So this episode premiered on March 4th, 2001, which leads us to, at least be specifically to a correction from last week's episode.
There's no correction. What are you talking about?
I have to correct because I definitely misunderstood what you were saying.
Yeah, okay.
I thought you were saying that the first episode of season 3 was a two-parter in that they took that 60-minute episode and split it into two 30-minute pieces.
Yeah, no one said that.
I definitely said that because I've had multiple people now email me correcting, going like, dude, what are you talking about? That's not how it went. And I was like, I don't know, dude. I was confused. Apparently, this episode, episode 1 and episode 2 aired on the exact same day. Yeah. I don't know why they're calling that a two-parter.
Well, because it was back to back. It was two episodes back to back. So that's basically
That's not what a two-parter means.
I mean, kind of is.
Nah, two-parter means like it's like part one and part two. Yeah, I think
that's what they were. It's just now we're calling them two separate episodes for whatever reason. But
they were completely unrelated, other than both being episodes of The Sopranos.
Oh, they were not related.
I guess
not
so.
Really.
Well, I mean, last episode definitely felt like there was. It felt like a bridge episode. We'll say that, and then this one, definitely feels like a full standalone episode.
Yeah, completely. Like the episode before it felt more experimental. They were doing like the to mention Girl Talk again. They were mashing up, you know, that I'll Be Watching You Police song, whatever it's called, Every Breath You Take.
Is that and, the one? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was such a weird.
It was, yeah.
What a weird sequence.
Not a great mashup.
They decided to make an entire episode for some reason with that mashup being the basis for the episode, and not great. But this one. Pretty fantastic.
I think this might be my favorite all-time Sopranos episode.
Do we want to do a quick Wayback Machine?
I mean, sure. I mean, it's the same. Like, again, it premiered on the same night as last week's episode. So we really already did the Wayback Machine for this one.
But here's what I think we should do.
Okay.
I think we should play the bumper.
Okay. Sure. Well, you
and then do a quick Wayback Machine.
Walk, walk. Teddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember.
Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
So, I mean, because that bumper begins with WAP three times, I feel like I consider it a microaggression every time you make me play it. But
it's absolutely.
It's Cardi B.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, they're just saying wet ass pussy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, wet Macaroni in a Pot, top movies were The Mexican, Hannibal, Sea Spot Run. This is March 4th, 2001, once again. Top songs were Stutter by Joe featuring Mystikal. Top alternative song was Drive by Incubus.
Hell yeah.
Some headlines. Fighting outside Kosovo raises fears in the Balkans. IRA detonated a bomb in front of the BBC television center in London, injuring 11 people. Yeah, all that good stuff.
All that stuff. Yeah. But honestly, if I'm being real, I just wanted you to play the bumper because, you know, I think we should never miss a
that
chance.
Was a slow news week. You guys remember slow news?
Slow news.
Yeah.
I don't. I don't even remember the concept.
I remember there was this days.
Dude, that was the sickest when it was just like nothing's happening, and then they would just like talk about a dog, and you'd be like, "Oh, that dog's running for mayor."
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's like that squirrel sure can water ski.
Yeah, this is like a timeline in which like every dog that runs for mayor wins, and we have to live in this reality yeah. where we have a bunch of dog mayors, and we're like, "We did not. This was just supposed to be a slow news day."
Yeah, and they didn't do anything about police brutality at all.
Yeah, no. They just keep electing dogs over and over again, and dogs are also racist.
Yeah.
They're too close to the police, you know? The exactly. Canine lobby.
Yeah. That's true. It's like one of the three jobs you can have as a dog is either you're either a snitch, a narc.
You're a cop, troop, or a firefighter.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but even then it's limited to Dalmatians, which is kind of screwed up.
And then you do have like the what do you call it, comfort dogs? This kind of like the prostitute. It's like the hoe of dog careers.
Yeah, they're dog sex workers. Yeah, exactly.
More like sex waggers, am I right?
There we go.
Hey. Yeah, yeah. You got it. You get how this podcast
works.
He
landed it.
All right, so let's get into it. Season 3, episode 2. Vince, what's a quick synopsis?
Tony's concerns that his mother will rat him out to the feds expire when she literally does. Later, Jen, I feel like you wrote this synopsis.
I didn't.
It feels like something Matt would have written. Later, Janice arrives to arrange the funeral, which takes a bizarre turn.
Okay. Again, this is the second episode in a row, by the way, where the synopsis is being cheeky, and I'm fucking sick of it. Like, yeah, I don't need it. I feel like the first two seasons, they had someone who, like, you know, actually didn't give a fuck about the show writing them. And now it's like someone, it feels like me doing it. It's very annoying.
Yeah. It's not even, it doesn't even take that bizarre of a turn for being honest.
Yeah, it just expires. God. All right.
Then he reaches for milk in the fridge, and then he gets a call about his mom. Turns out, very much like the milk.
She's gone sour.
Yeah.
Some alternate titles real quick. The only one that I wrote is Livia, more like Die-ia.
Nice.
My alternate titles were Uncle Ben, For Sale, Used Baby Book, Never Filled.
That's my favorite.
That's the old Hemingway six-word memoir format. What are you going to do? And at least she didn't suffer.
At least she didn't suffer. I think that that's absolutely the alternate title of this episode. So real quick, some Bada B stories, just so you know what's going on. Bada B stories. Tony suffers the loss of his mother. Noah suffers from Tony's racism. Meadow suffers from Noah's anger. AJ suffers from Robert Frost. Janice suffers with reality. Carmela suffers from Janice's delusion. Everyone suffered for years under the yoke of Livia Soprano. And at least Livia didn't suffer. Those are all of the through points of the episode, just kind of put together in this really creative way. You can tell why people listen to this podcast, right?
So this episode starts out with, Meadow is home from college watching a movie, and she's there with one of this episode's at least three new characters introduced, Ben Tannenbaum. Noah Tannenbaum. Why did I write? Oh, because he called Uncle Ben. Noah Tannenbaum, who is like an obnoxious film student from Columbia, and just a great. Even if the character ended here, which he doesn't, would be a great single serving character.
Yeah, once again, like The Sopranos is for some reason really good at writing both middle school kids and college age kids. It's like they're good.
Pretentious college kids, it really excels at.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He just came on the screen and he started saying a bunch of words. And I wanted to punch him. I wouldn't like this kid at all.
We actually have a clip of that if we want to get into it.
Yes, please.
Okay.
I'll be ready to bolt in a sack.
Mr. Soprano?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Noah Tannenbaum.
How you doing?
Appreciate you letting us screen here. Those Bose direct reflectors make all the difference. You a film buff? People say Hawks invented the genre with Scarface, but Cagney was modernity. Muni was not, so I give the nod to William Wellman.
No, I'm just going to grab the Bare Naked Ladies CD and then let's hit the road.
I think Noah represents like the exact type of criticism we didn't want to do on this podcast, where yes. You're just kind of like name checking different. I don't even know what he's saying when he says Wellman got the nod, or Muni got, what did he say? Muni got the nod. I don't even know what that means.
This is one of the few episodes where I didn't have the, for some reason, did not have the captions on. And when I was like, oh, I should turn those on so I could understand what he's saying. And I was like, actually, no, I'm not going to do that.
I did it because, and I still didn't get it.
Yeah, because that's the point. The point is he's trying to nerd out with Tony on some real esoteric film buff bullshit.
Yeah, probably black and white movies. Like yeah. What he cares about.
Yeah, and just talking about who invented modernity. I was just like, what the fuck are you talking about? And just you see Tony's reaction to him at first. And my initial impression was like, oh, he's as annoyed about this kid being a nerd as I am, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't realize that instead he's just so racist that even this kid, who I would consider, like, to me, I was just like, oh, he's just some Jewish kid. And it's weird that Tony is just like, he's following the one drop rule very, very seriously. And it's an insane level of racism.
I do. Like, do you think he would be as upset if Noah was just Jewish?
That's a good question.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he would, he might be upset a little bit because, like, we're Catholic and hope it doesn't turn into marriage or something. But I think that this has everything to do with the fact that he's black. And, like, that to him is the only thing that matters. I think if he was Jewish, he probably would have said some racist shit to him, but it wouldn't
have...
He
would have mentioned a different bread instead of bread.
He would have talked about challah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did seem like when he said, "Oh, my parents are in the entertainment industry," he would have been like, "Figures," you know.
Yeah.
But instead, like,
we're
I don't
having the eggy bread at the communion, so shove off.
So, what do you think of Jesus Christ then? Like, he maybe would have done that, but there's no way that he would have said, like, "You're not seeing my kid anymore." I think he would have been much more calm because he's got regular American ass racism, which is like is just colorism and then mixed with years and years of systemic oppression. But like, he's definitely pulling some, like, he's going old school with the racism in ways that I was kind of like surprised by, like the fact that he just keeps trying to see what racial slur sticks at one point. is wild. I have a clip from that, but before we play it, I also got very distracted when I watched this scene. I did. I got distracted because Meadow mentions that she just wants to go grab the Bare Naked Ladies CD real quick.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was just like one of those things where I just like, I wanted to just watch the show, but I just kept thinking about Bare Naked Ladies.
That's,
anyways.
That's like that's the Sopranos version of The Godfather. Leave the gun, take the cannoli. It's
right.
Leave the Cagney, take the Bare Naked Lady CD.
No, I'm just gonna grab the Bare Naked Lady CD and then let's hit the road.
What's your background, Noel?
It's
Noah. I'm from Los Angeles, West LA. My family's in the business.
I make mad films.
I mean, show business.
Okay, I don't make films.
I don't know why they call it the business.
Those old Tarzan movies. What I mean is, like, we're Italian.
Oh, my dad is Jewish and my mother's family is African-American.
So we do understand each other here. You're Ditsun.
Excuse me?
A Moulinian, charcoal briquette.
Chicken to China, the Chinese chicken.
What's your problem?
I think you know what my problem is. See, I got business associates who are black. And they don't want my son with their daughters and I don't want their sons with mine.
Because I'm all about value.
Fuck you.
So when my little girl comes down the stairs, you're going to say how nice it was to meet me. Then you're going to go drop her off at school and you're going to say,
sorry.
Smoky Garden State. Burned out by hunters, I wanted to meet Nella, then we back to pick up my laundry. Later, Dad.
Well,
you know, it's great. They can't all be winners, first of all, but...
How dare you? That one was a winner.
I honestly didn't make the connection between Fake Film Buff and the song One Week, but it really is all there. Like, he is talking about...
It's all there, dude.
Like, Kurosawa, he makes mad films, but mm-hmm. they'd have a samurai. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying that, like, I'm the girl talk of podcasting, so...
Your remix was so good that I I had to log off for a second.
It broke the internet briefly.
Your girl talk remix.
I mean, you know, I'm very talented, but in general, I think that scene was kind of it led me down the path of believing that that's what this episode was about when I originally saw it, and I think
instead
one of the things
becomes just a small arc.
They instead of like making it the episode where Tony, I don't know, like does racism and then learns from it or something, they decide to throw a wrench into it, but with the death of his mother, Livia Soprano, which I appreciated.
I think it's interesting that he says that he has associates who are black, that he doesn't want his sons and daughters like dating or whatever, but we never see them, those black people. Yeah. So it's like the equivalent of being like, listen, I have a black friend. I'm not racist.
Yeah right.
Remember like six episodes ago when I had that conversation with the Reverend guy? Come on.
Yeah. You know what's weird is they actually brought him back for the funeral in this episode where you see him talking to the Reverend and the Assemblyman, and it's almost like that's the writers or like David Chase, the creator, being like, see, like I swear I can't tell if David Chase is defensive, like agrees with Tony or not in a lot of senses. I mean, I know that he knows he's writing him racist, but I'm also like. They decide the one time to bring the Reverend back to be like, see, Tony is, Tony's got all sorts of friends.
And then like Meadow sees him and then it's just like, I guess it's supposed to be like this kind of note of like her recognizing his hypocrisy, but it's like, is it? Like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, no, it's the idea that somehow she would look at that and then think to herself like, you know what? Maybe he's not racist. It's like, no, yeah, he's very, very racist.
What if she's like, I'm going to fuck that old black man. I'll show him.
So before we get to Livia's death, there's first a scene with one of my other favorite characters that they brought back for this one, which is the one-legged Russian nurse lady.
What's her name again?
I forgot. I wish you had told me so I could look that up.
I forgot too. I just in our show notes I just kept writing one-legged lady over and over again.
I didn't know you're gonna put me on the spot, but so she has discovered that Livia hasn't written in any of the baby books that Carmela bought for her and is trying to get her to write in them, and then there's the last, like, Livia's last scene on the show,
which is interesting, because
so there's backstory on that, which is that Livia, Nancy Marchand, who plays Livia, had died like a year before they shot this, so they had to give her a send off on the show, but they didn't
they had to the crow her
and CGI really wasn't what it is now, and so you really see the seams in the photoshopping that they did there.
Oh yeah. And not only that, but they decided to write an entire scene around kind of assorted Livia sayings.
Yeah.
Like they didn't, the scene to me, I understand they wanted to do a send off and whatnot, but to me it is one of the most useless scenes to have in her death episode. Like you don't need to see her before she dies have a scene where she's just saying random ass shit that they just cut together from previous episodes.
It went a little too far. Like, there's one part that is such a great Livia line, and Livia in general really reminds me of my grandmother. I don't know if that is, holds true.
That's fucked up, dude.
For other people, or if it's just, but like, she really is a lot like my grandmother. And this one, I got a little clip of it. I know it's cobbled together from previous Livia sayings, but I thought at least part of it was pretty solid.
Hey, Ma.
Look who calls.
Well, actually, I'm standing here in front of you. Hey. So, how's it going?
What do you care? Out of sight, out of mind.
Brought you some books on tape, since you say you can't concentrate to read.
I wish the Lord would take me now.
That line in particular, I don't know why. I feel like I can so imagine my grandma saying that. I wish the, like, whenever she complains about anything, it's like, ah, I heard you're not doing so well. Oh, I wish the Lord would take me.
Listen, I think I think we can all relate to wishing that the Lord would take us. I don't think there's anything, wrong with that. But what was strange to me about it was just that, like, I almost wanted to go back and rewatch every Livia Soprano scene just so I could find where they took these clips from, because I swear I had heard every single one of them in a different episode of The Sopranos, and the way they just kind of mixed and matched it. Like, it literally starts off with Tony shows up at the house and she goes, "Oh, look who calls." And he goes, "Actually, I'm standing right here in front of you." It's like, this is terrible. This is, they didn't.
But like, Livia's thing to guilt you for not doing something while you're in the middle of doing that.
But he's
or more
not
than
calling.
That. Vince, yeah, but he's not there. He doesn't need to call because he's there in front of her.
Right, right. But she says the words, "Look who calls."
Yeah, it's weird.
That's strange. It's very strange. And it felt like that was the only clip they had where she was saying something close to what they wanted to. And they're like, just put it in there. And then he'll be like, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, but her in the midst of guilting him for not seeing her more while he's in the process of coming to see her. I don't know. It feels very Livia to me.
Yeah, well, personally, I thought it felt really strange and kind of cobbled together.
It definitely gets strange right around the time where she, like, waves her hanky at him, and it's clearly, it's clearly just like, it feels like they're doing a prank call with, like, Olivia, Olivia Board.
Yeah, speaking of which, I have another version of the scene that I made with Olivia Board.
Oh, no.
So,
hey, Ma.
You want that lamp?
Well, actually, I'm standing here in front of you.
Oh, poor you.
So, how's it going?
Kill me now.
Brought you some books on tape, since you say you can't concentrate to read.
Kill me now.
In the meantime, brought you the Horse Whisperer and Omerta.
These blacks.
What, are you going to freak out every time I try to do something nice for you? Jesus. Sis.
Kill me now.
She's going to finish baby journals from long time ago. Kill me now. My idea.
Kill me now.
What the fuck?
Kill me now.
Look at this.
You want that lamp?
Supposed to fill these out. 20 years. Fat fucking nothing.
Oh, poor you.
Carmela's my return these books to the kids filled with memories. You can't write stuff down from your life for your grandkids?
Stab me. Here. Here. Now, please.
Hey, you're too busy feeling sorry for yourself.
She will do it.
Please.
It's good
Please.
For her. She realized that.
Please.
Keep her mind active.
Why Please. Do anything if there's not something in it for her?
The world is a jungle.
Well, listen up. I want you to concentrate. I know it's difficult. Remember the airline tickets?
Stab me.
Did you say that? Or did the Fed say that? What did you tell them when you were in the lockup?
Stab me.
This is important. They're trying to build a RICO case against me.
Stab me.
Don't wave your hanky at me. What are you going to say from now on?
You want that lamp?
You know, for a year, I didn't speak to you. Maybe I should have kept it that way.
Oh, these blacks.
Fuck it. Do what you want.
You want that lamp?
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah.
Well, we have fun.
Honestly.
Don't talk to it again, dude.
You know, okay, I'm just saying that would have been a better scene. I feel like they basically just did that. They were like, find all the times that she, in one way or another, is like, please kill me. I want to die. I want to die. I hate you. Please kill me. Ah. And then they just remixed it.
Yeah.
They literally pulled another Matt Lieb. I swear, I'm not sure if I had, you know, much influence on The Sopranos, being that I was a child.
You retroactively changed Hitler history. You changed Hitler. But no, you actually changed history instead of Hitler. But whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, it was, to me, a strange scene, and I didn't care for it.
So, but from there, you know, we go from that scene to finding out she dies. And then, you know, most of the rest of the episode is them dealing with Livia's funeral. And just the way everybody says the same, like, two or three canned phrases. Just wonderful.
Yeah, it is wild, because it's like they literally... It's such a good episode because of the fact that they continue to say the one good thing that they can think of to say about her, because no one has anything nice to say about her.
It's not so much about her. It's just like saying something around her, basically.
Yeah, at least she didn't suffer, which is an ironic thing to say, because it's like, I know what they're saying. They're saying at least in death, she died suddenly and whatnot. But the idea that she did not suffer is patently ridiculous. Like she suffered her entire life. Her entire life was suffering. Just every waking moment was awful for her.
And the subtext of the episode, like the thing that they never say out loud, which is very obvious from like everything that happens, is that like she didn't want a service because... like, a funeral service is not for the dead person. A funeral service is for the living. So this entire episode is, like, people trying to deal with it, trying to make it about them or deal with it in such a way that it does something for them. Because clearly, like, it's not about, like, honoring Livia or her wishes. Like, for Janice, it's about her becoming a center of attention. And and for everybody else, it's about, like, sucking up to Tony in some way.
Yeah, it is like, it's a peak Janice episode. Yeah, I will say this, like, Janice in this episode really shines in this way where, you know, you've seen her do her like kind of manipulative thing before in previous seasons. But in this one, she is just going full trash mafia. like she's, you know, her brother's, you know, head of the New Jersey mafia. So she is in, quote, the mafia in some aspect. But the way she utilizes that power is to get people to just do like a bunch of new agey hippie shit and to manipulate like, people's feelings.
It's like she figured out a way to get everyone to subscribe to her SoundCloud, like through her mother's death, basically. And then before that, there is also, so there's a few things going on. So like Noah Tannenbaum comes in and he accidentally gets Tony onto like a Jimmy Cagney trip where he's like, despite being incredibly obnoxious and just spouting gibberish, he like sparks in Tony a desire to go back and watch these Jimmy Cagney old movies.
Then on the Bose system.
Yeah, on the Bose Great system. And then there's like a brief sojourn with AJ where he's learning about Robert Frost. And I chose this sound clip partly because I like it, but partly because Meadow is doing the exact same type of like bullshit college art criticism that Noah is teaching her. So I'll play you that clip.
That's pulling a sleigh.
So this is a Thanksgiving poem. Like, over the river and through the woods to grandma's house we go.
No, it's not a Thanksgiving poem. What's covering the field?
Snow.
Yay. And what does snow symbolize?
Christmas.
Hello. Cold. Endless white. Endless nothing.
I don't know.
Death.
I thought black was death.
He has miles to go before he sleeps.
So he must be far away from his house.
The sleep of death. The big sleep. He's talking about his own death. which is yet to come but will come.
That's fucked up.
Gotta go.
I thought black was death.
White too.
I like that because... I don't know, maybe it hits extra home, like if you've majored in the arts or the humanities, but I feel like that's such a academic approach to like art criticism, where it's like, oh, obviously like these colors mean death. What are the colors? Oh, both white and black symbolize death. So clearly that's what he was talking about, because snow equals white equals death. And this poem has like a solution to it, and if you didn't get the correct solution, you've screwed up somehow.
Yeah, it is weird that somehow you're allowed to teach this in school and have the answers be like factual. Like it'd be like, what does white symbolize? And if you were to be like, well, snow is white, and then they'd be like, wrong, fail, you do not understand art.
It's like they're literally treating it like it's a fucking algebra problem.
Right, exactly. It is weird that you're able, but I think I was taught that exact same lesson in school, like where they were like, you know, they showed me that exact Robert Frost poem, and they'd be like, what does it mean?
Yeah.
And then if you were able to just, half of high school is just pretending to be interested in the things that your teacher is specifically trying to teach you and is interested in. Yeah.
I mean, that scene I think is why like poetry is mostly dead, because kids were taught like, oh, I have to try to find out what white stands for in the poem.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's not really the point of it, or yeah.
Yeah, they turned literature into just another math class, and it ruined it for everyone.
Yeah. So there was that scene.
Summertime and the living is thirsty. Again. Once again, I've done that joke. And once again, it's a great joke.
Very funny, Matt.
Thank you.
But you're right. It is summer. And during the summer, I love to keep Fiji water on hand to keep my family and me hydrated and refreshed.
Here's the thing about Fiji water. It really is from the islands of Fiji.
You're a liar.
No, I swear to God, it actually is. Drop by drop, Fiji water collects in a sustainable, ancient, artesian aquifer 1,600 miles away from the nearest continent, protected and preserved naturally from external elements. But I'm always wondering, Vince, how does Fiji water taste so good?
That's such a good question. And the answer is that as the water filters through volcanic rock, it collects a unique profile of electrolytes and minerals, resulting in more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving Fiji water its signature soft, smooth taste. You know, yesterday I happened to take my son to California's largest water park, and you know, it's hot out, the sun's beating down, you're carrying a toddler around, you get thirsty.
Sure do.
And you know what I did?
What?
I reached a meaty paw out for that natural artesian spring water that comes only from Fiji.
That's right. That's right. And listen, I enjoy Fiji water on a hot day. I enjoy Fiji water on a cold day. I enjoy Fiji water on a medium day. Just basically whenever I'm thirsty, I reach for a nice bottle of Fiji water.
I know your mouth gets dry when you're trying to do those royalty freestyles sometimes.
It does. It does. I have a very dry mouth. People have commented on that. And I like to wet it with the Fiji water. And here's the thing, Vince. Unlike some other premium bottled water, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's like the best kind of electrolytes. And this water even has a perfectly balanced pH of 7.7. Fiji water really is Earth's finest water. And since 2022, its 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles have been produced in 100% recycled plastic. So you can feel proud of your choice in bottled water.
Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office.
It's not just water, it's Fiji water.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And then we get to Janice, who originally says that she doesn't want to come and that Livia didn't want a service, and manages to make it all about her anyway.
Yeah, she's hanging out with her like early 20s boyfriend, I guess, who works at the same restaurant as her.
Dude, that was wild.
About not having days off, which I get.
Yeah, so that was going to be, we can just go into like favorite scene, least favorite scene, because that was one of my favorite scenes in this, is the snippet of conversation of Janice's son. Like, the only his only line.
No, that's her boyfriend. That's her fiance.
Oh, is that her boy? That's her fiance?
That's her fiance.
Okay. Well, her fiance's only line is just, and then he goes, "You got to work on Columbus Day weekend." That is his only line, is complaining about having to work on Columbus Day weekend.
Yeah, and then she's like, "Eat your eggs, babe." That moment, I remember watching that. I was just like, "Oh man!" Like, I just, because like I've known people like Janice Soprano before, where they're able to kind of like latch on to a young, weak boy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's nice to see a couple where they could both do better.
Exactly. Yeah, it's especially to know where Janice came from before in the previous season, where she's dating Richie April, who she murders, and to know that she like moved back to like Seattle or wherever, and then decided, you know what, I'm gonna find a real weak boy.
I mean, Janice is kind of like is a life lesson like in and of herself, because. Mm-hmm. I mean, like most, we've talked about this before, like most of like the dramatic tension of The Sopranos is that Tony is supposed to be this forward-thinking 90s man who's like in touch with his feelings and, you know, mm-hmm. can have frank conversations with his kids and is open-hearted. But then his job is telling him that he has to be, you know, Jimmy Cagney and like this, the idea of men that he grew up with. But then... You also, so like if you thought about it in that way, you'd be like, wow, if he was just a little more progressive, he'd be such a better human. But then they throw Janice into the mix, showing that, oh, you could also take all of those new agey ideas to heart and be just as, if not more terrible.
Right. Yeah. It shows you, it's like, it shows that whether or not, you know, you're a traditional like conservative person or like a liberal new agey person, that if your heart is dog shit, you're going to you're gonna use it for evil. Yes. Like no matter what,
the same way you know, Christians in the antebellum era could use the Bible to justify slavery, the same way that they can do that, Janice can use these Eastern philosophies that are all about you know, finding like being like purely selfless. She can somehow use those to become the most selfish person in the world.
Yeah, she's kind of incredible. And it is funny that her mother dying, you know, there's like this wave of relief that like Tony has that is immediately snuffed out when Janice comes back, because you realize that Livia's not really dead. That Livia just now lives through Janice, and Janice is the new Livia. It's
and all of the sorry, go ahead.
Janice isn't all bad. She was checking the integrity of the basement for free. That was really nice of her.
Yeah, they really went all out on this episode with Janice, where they were like, you know, the first thing she does is strong arm Tony to pay for half price coach tickets back to New Jersey.
Yeah.
She comes back and immediately starts putting on a show, like crying about her mother, who she wasn't even going to go to her fucking funeral. And then she's looking for buried treasure in her mother's house. Yeah. Like, looking for buried treasure is, to me, that is like, that's the exact personality type of everyone in the mafia.
Yeah,
you know, it's just kind of like, how do I how do I put like the least amount of effort into something and then just immediately become a millionaire? And it's like, I'll just dig a bunch of holes in my mother's house because I know she has buried treasure there. Like anything not to work is everyone who is in the mafia and mafia adjacent, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, that would totally be Olivia thing. You know, she's got a bunch of family members that are in an all cash business and she probably doesn't trust banks very much. So she probably would have treasure stashed around her house. But like in the same, the beauty of that whole storyline is like Tony's initial thought is that because his mom is dead, all his problems are solved now. But like a lot of the times when a parent dies, all of like the potential and all of the potential sibling rivalries that are like waiting under the surface, they come to the fore because now you actually have to divide up the stuff and decide who is deserving of which parts of your parents' legacy.
Yeah. I was just thinking about this. What do you think Janice's credit score is? It's probably terrible.
Impeccable. So good.
I mean, I just can't imagine. It's very. And she just seems like someone who is. She's in a lot of debt, and I don't know to who, but it does seem like she just feels like someone who has a very low credit score. Anyways, Tony definitely loses any relief that he had early on with the death of his mother in realizing that like she's not really dead, because not only does she live through Janice, but the entire eulogy section sequence in the episode, you realize that everyone in that room in one form or another has had their life made so much harder because of Livia, and that continues to this day. It was like the idea that they all live with the scars of Livia Soprano, and they have to sit there while Janice, one of the most scarred up people of all, is pretending like, you know, anyone gives a shit to like say something nice about her, you know.
And the other thing that's happening in that entire sequence is, you know, it starts early on, like when Tony first finds out and he's just like, hey, what are you gonna do? And then like and then of course every person that that finds out about the death after that says either what are you gonna do, or at least she didn't suffer. And the greatest scene is just Tony watching like his supposedly progressive minded daughter, who is like the she's basically the culmination of everything that they've been trying to do. You know, they're trying to infiltrate this society and become part of like the power structure, and they and their example is
pretty much like Roseanne this show, actually, when I think about it.
Yeah. And so they saved and they sent their daughter off to Columbia, and then she comes back and she immediately starts saying the same shit that everybody else is saying, is what are you gonna do? Oh, at least she didn't suffer. And Tony's like, look, she's becoming a pod person just like everyone else.
Yeah, I like how her kids are like, sorry about your mom, dad.
Sorry about that old lady who used to come here and yell at us. To me, the entire eulogy scene, you know, only I think it's only the last 20-15 minutes of the episode, but it is it immediately like catapults it into like probably top three best episodes of Sopranos of all time.
It's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's and that's a really funny scene.
That's the thing about the show in general, is that like I almost exclusively judge it on its on how funny it is, which is probably one of the reasons why people who really love the Sopranos and listen to this podcast are like, why do you hate Sopranos so much? And it's like, well, because sometimes it's not that funny. Sometimes it's like it's kind of dramatic and good, but I judge it by its funniest moments.
That's also just, you know, it's serialized television. Like the ultimate review of any serialized television show is like, did you keep watching? That doesn't mean you're gonna love every individual episode.
Yeah,
my response is, what are you gonna do about it? You know,
yeah,
it's a good response.
Hey, so at least you didn't suffer.
Exactly. So, and then the eulogy sequence comes to my other favorite scene, which was just fantastic, which I have a clip of, which is, you know, Christopher has been getting stoned and doing lines with Silvio the entire time, and Janice is like hectoring everyone into speaking at her weird, you know, remembrances of Livia party.
Yeah.
And then Christopher finally gets the mic, and I got a clip of that.
They say there's no two people on Earth exactly the same. No two faces, no two sets of fingerprints. But do they know that for sure? Because they would have to get everybody together in one huge space. And obviously that's not possible, even with computers.
Even with computers.
But not only that, they'd have to get all the people who ever lived, not just the ones now. So they got no proof. They got nothing.
This sounds like him talking about seeing My Bloody Valentine.
I like how he just goes off on a tangent where he starts out talking about how she's probably, you know, she's not as one of a kind. Maybe we haven't actually lost Olivia. She's still around. And then it gets into like he's talking to the police where he's like, you got no proof that everybody's fingerprints are different.
Yeah. All of a sudden in his mind reverts to him being interrogated.
Yeah, I watched this episode twice, and for some reason the first time and the second time I didn't realize what like a driving force Janice is. Yeah. And the first time I didn't connect the fact that Chris was talking out of his ass because he was stoned, because like what weed lasts that long, like to get high and then go to a funeral and then like get back and then still be like so zonked is so funny to me. Like yeah. I wanted Furio to talk actually too. I want to see high Furio like that
was- yeah, well Furio has one of my favorite lines in the episode where he just randomly brings up Survivor and he's like, you know what we should do, we should go to the winner and say you're not gonna survive this if you don't give me some of that money. And it's like that's his high thought. His high thought is like, how can we do extortion on reality show winners?
That's good writing. Do you think the water cooler in 2001, people were just like, this is excellent. This is prestige television.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Prestige television in general is like kind of, it's almost like this was like, this was the first prestige television show. And then you kind of like look back on it and you're just like, yeah, there's High Furio talking about extorting Survivor winners and shit. And you're like, dude, this is art. What can you say other than this is art?
It's true. I mean, it is literally when people win the lottery, you just, they die. Like, and this is why it's people like Furio.
Yeah, for sure. There's got to be someone out there who's extorting people who win shit. And I'm glad it's someone as sweet as Furio because, you know, he's just a good guy. He's a solid, solid man.
I definitely think there should have been like a Furio attempt at a funeral speech because that feels like it would have been high comedy.
Yeah, no, that would have been good. But I thought they did a good job with like just kind of like the mix of all the people who are speaking. My favorite, other than Hesh, who just all he says is she didn't mince words, which is damn, that is a good eulogy. My favorite was Fanny, who was the old lady sitting in a wheelchair who no one's ever seen before, and says she was my best friend. Whenever someone would die, she would tell me,
right?
Yeah. Which only you'd have to not really know her at all to think that is something that she's doing out of friendship and not something she's doing because she's a sick fuck.
Well, that's another thing that very much reminded me of my grandmother, where it's like they can only start conversations by telling you like who's dead or who's suffering. It's like they're just
grandmas love to tell you who's dead.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
No, my parents, my mom specifically actually is always telling me who's dead or who's in jail. It's kind of it's just a running thing. It's just like,
I want to know who's in jail. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, my neighbor got into a relationship with a 13-year-old girl and he's in jail now.
Aww.
Yikes.
Yeah. Who is dead? Well, it's like who's dead. And then because like a few people have died, you know, this year. But it was like it's also who's dying. Like we have a family friend who I think has been dying for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like I come home, you know, hey mom, and it'd be like, you should really write a letter to, you know, such and such a person. You know, they're not going to be around much longer. It's like, this is.
I should probably write an email then.
Yeah, right. I should probably send a text.
They're always telling you who's about to die, and it's like, hey, grandma, like your decrepitude is enough of a painful reminder of my own mortality without you
right,
constantly
exactly.
bringing up actual people dying.
Yeah, yeah. But Livia's obsession with the deaths of other people, I think, was less about. I think it was just. It was more sinister. It was. It was an obsession with her, but I think it was also. I think when most people do it, there's like a little bit of just like, and that's the news. I'm old, you know,
yeah.
like that's, you want to know what I've been doing? I've been, you know, seeing who's dying. It's like the ticker at the bottom just has all the names, but like,
I was talking on the landline earlier today and this is
out. Back to you in the studio. I'm about to die too. But like, I think with Livia, it comes from a place of wanting the other person who she's telling about the death to feel as miserable as she does. Like, it has everything to do with her trying to, like, misery loves company people.
Yeah.
And
it's like she needs other people to prove their worth by suffering when they're around her to prove that they care.
Right, because even when someone it hasn't just died, she'll just randomly tell you about some people who died in the newspaper.
Yeah,
she'll be like, there was a car crash, and you know, she'll talk about how
did
everyone
you hear about this knockout game that they're playing.
Everyone's eating Tide Pods and dying. They burn in their throats. I don't know why my Livia is Jewish, but I'm doing it. I think if we get to the part of this podcast where we talk about our favorite and least favorite scene, I have to go back to Janice,
mm-hmm.
because it's easy to say that my favorite scene is the entire eulogy scene, right? Like that's great. But I think for me, my favorite scene other than that is when Janice decides to strong arm the one-legged caretaker, whose name I forget, over her mother's records. Because Janice is, like I said before, she's just the trashiest mafioso who ever lived. You know, she's like, she uses her what she's seen in her family for years and years, which is like intimidation.
I think it's
she's
more like the pettiest mafioso ever.
yeah So I have a clip of petty Janice.
My mom had this kind of extensive record collection, Caruso, Robert Merrill, shitload of Broadway shows. Many of them were in mint condition. Do you know where they are?
She gave to me those records. I feel I have to respect her wishes.
Oh, come on. This is just about you bogarting those discs for your ass. They're worth a fortune to the right collector.
I will not answer such you.
I want the entire discography back at the house by this weekend.
All right. You don't have to play. It goes on for a while. Yeah, that's The Godfather played by a bad recorder. Yeah, there's just like the idea that Livia gave her those records.
I love the Russian syntax too. She gives to me as gifts those records.
Yeah, she. I will not discuss here.
She was very generous woman.
Yeah, very generous. No, it's like the idea that Janice can't see past her own weird obsession with profiting off of her family, that she's like, oh, come on. We both know the reason you want those records is for the money. Like, as if the mint condition musical theater records are somehow like collector's items that are going to, you know, make her thousands of dollars is wild. And just, Yeah, and it's the moments where she chooses to strong arm people that to me are the funniest, and also kind of where you have the most insight into who Janice is on the inside, which is not just like petty, but also stupid as shit. And it's wonderful.
It's also like a super Italian thing to use as your trump card, the idea that you're not going to go to one of your family members' funerals. And I've seen that play out at many of my family members' funerals.
Really?
Like, oh my God. Can you believe that Uncle Ernie didn't come? And it's like, oh, it's because he was pissed about, you know, he was pissed about something that was as petty as like not getting someone's records because, you know, they gave them away to the maid. I've seen that play out, you know, with at least like three or four different family members.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I've got some people who have a lot of spite in the Lieb family, but not going to a funeral. I'm trying to think if that is there. Maybe, I don't know. All of my aunts and uncles in Boston are kind of like that, I guess. But anyways, it is
Boston's a very spiteful place, I think, in general.
Oh sure, yeah, spiteful. It's famous for spite. Racism and spite. The episode ends with Tony sitting and watching the rest of Public Enemy with James Cagney.
So this is is the second time that we've seen the scene where he shoves the grapefruit in the lady's face, correct?
I thought so.
Because it's also in the Junior Pussy Eating episode, which they like call back to at the end when he smashes a pie into his
oh, that's right,
cunnilingus victim's face.
Yeah, that's right. And because that's right, I was watching and I was waiting for that moment where he's like, "Did you warble my little wren?" And I was like, "That was from the eating pussy episode."
Yeah,
what a great
also,
episode.
Also, it's pretty crazy that Jimmy Cagney like played like this Irish guy who looks like he's about 5'4". Is playing like the Italian tough who like whacks people in the nose. He's like, "Come on, fella, aren't you gonna pay up? You better 23 skidoo right now, you see?"
Yeah. Old gangster films. If you've ever watched any, you'll know that they suck, and it's weird that people watch them. It makes me wonder if our old gangster films will age out in some way. Like at some point is the Godfather gonna be bad? I don't know. I mean, maybe
Has anyone seen Four Brothers recently or
no?
Like, I don't know how ours stack up at all.
That's true. I think about it, I remember that Boondock Saints was a good movie until I rewatched it.
Man, you were definitely a stone college kid at one point in your life.
Dude, Boondock Saints was like a genius movie if you like really detested movies and only understood like if something was cool. So it was a movie that I was like, "This is cool." And, you know,
it gets me. Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, finally a movie that understands me.
Before Fight Club, that was all people had was that. Yeah, movie.
Exactly. Fight Club was the first one that where it was like where we could relate to a larger swath of the people because of the fact that like Boondock Saints wasn't, I don't know if it was really widely loved. I think it was just kind of like Stone College Kids and whatnot. But Fight Club, it was like, bruh, let's all start Fight Clubs. Like, and I got to say, to this day, we did. Now MMA is a big thing. I got to say Fight Club has to do with that probably, you know. A lot, yeah. I would say. What do you think, Vince?
No, I think it was Bloodsport, you know, invented the kumite.
The fuck are you talking about? I know what Bloodsport is, but what's kumite?
That's the tournament that they go to in Bloodsport.
Yeah, it's when you fight to the death.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's wild.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be honest, I've never seen that movie.
You'd know that if you ever killed a man with your fists, Matt.
I've never done it. I did just see the Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling movie Over the Top.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, very that one ruled.
Solid flick. My favorite thing about that is that his last name's Hawk, and there's this big drama about his son not taking his last name, and his son's name is Mike, and they never point out the fact that if he takes his dad's name, he'd be Mike Hawk.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense though that he wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then his name would be Mike Cock, you know?
Yeah. No. Oh yeah. No. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get jokes, mm-hmm. dude.
Yeah, I get we got them. You get them.
What, Brody, did you have like a favorite scene or a least favorite scene in this?
You know, definitely when Chris and Fear are taking bong hits for sure.
Mm-hmm.
What else did I like? My favorite scene was definitely just the ending scene where mm-hmm. people just have nothing nice to say. I remember the first time I watched it, I was just like, man, if I was in this room, I could save this energy. I could make up some bullshit on the spot about some woman I never knew.
Yeah.
But then my favorite shot is like the one lady on the couch who you've never seen before. And she's just like, I've got something to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she just says, you know, she didn't suffer.
Yeah. Oh, that is.
And for that, we can be thankful.
Yeah. The that. Whole thing is just so, oh, actually, you know what? I did like, what's his name's character who had the restaurant burned down?
Oh, Artie. Yeah.
Yeah. I like how they tease Artie of just like really having a breakdown and he's like throwing trash around yeah. in the backyard. And then it's just like, oh, I got something to say. And then he walks into the room and he's just like, you know what, everybody? And then Carmela's just like, all right, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a comedy, that shit.
No, it was pretty great. Especially since like, I want to know what Artie's plan was, you know, because it seemed like his plan was to be like, I have a memory. One time she told me that Tony burned down my store.
Yeah, that's right.
And then
people who work for Tony.
Yeah. Anyways, the mafia. I'll see you later. Like, just seemed like a bad, not thought out plan, you know. But it ends with Tony watching Public Enemy. What is he watching? James Cagney's character dies, and meanwhile the mother is oblivious and singing as she's making the bed for him, and then Tony cries, which is cute because you're like, oh yeah, I get it, because you know, his mother
yeah,
you know what I mean, because his mother was not nice.
Yep.
And she saw a nice He saw a nice mother and was like, "Ah, man, that sucks.
Wish I had a mom like that.
Wish I had a cool mom." And then it ends, and you're like, "Sick episode." In general, it is definitely one of my favorites.
I think that one's my top episode thus far. It's pretty fantastic.
Oh yeah, for sure. Real quick, in terms of, so who is the real gangster of this episode? I would say two things. I think it's number one, racism. And number two, Livia Soprano. Number three, suffering and putting on airs. So there's a few. There's a few. In terms of it's the 90s, what are all the 90s references? I think
the real gangsta is generational trauma.
Ooh.
This episode, yeah.
Fuck. That's good.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Should have said that earlier, dude. That's perfect. You would have saved me from saying all the dumb ones. The two 90s references were Furio's Survivor Pitch and Bare Naked Ladies. And our Gabba Va Fangul is in which we go through Italian slang. Are two racial slurs, Ditsun and Moulinian.
Uh-huh.
Both of which... You usually, Brody, we have like, there's a YouTube channel, this guy Stevie B, who breaks down all like Italian slang.
Yeah, he couldn't find one for these.
Apparently he does not do racial slurs. Yeah, no,
Stevie B is way too positive for that. Stevie B, it takes all kinds. Ditsun, he basically translates it in the episode where he says, you know, charcoal briquette.
Is that what Ditsun is?
Yeah, it's some sort of word.
Not a... car by Nissan.
The Nissan Ditsun.
No, it's a Ditsun, yeah. I forget what exactly it means, something like charcoal. And then Moulinian is weird because supposedly it's a bastardization of melanzane, which means eggplant, but Moulinian does not sound that much like melanzane. to me, yeah. But you know,
it sounds like mulatto, but it sounds like mulatto with onions.
It does. Yeah. Sounds delicious. Yeah. That's for sure.
Muffalata.
Yeah, I mean, it's with all Italian American slang, it's always like gabagool is capicola, and you're like, why? Yeah. You know, you just roll with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all in all, I would say a great episode. I really enjoyed it, and you know, I feel like. You know, I feel like people should email us and let me know how much they enjoy all my remixes. they take a really long time. And, you know, I have to get positive feedback or else I just won't do them. Yeah, and, sure. You know,
definitely
if I saw
the Bare Naked Ladies one, that was tough.
Yeah,
that one really worked well.
You know, that took so long. At one point, like it was supposed to make dinner, and I was like, I'm sorry, I forgot. I was in the middle of remixing this episode of Sopranos with 1 week, and my girlfriend got mad. Anyways, Brody, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Yeah. Where can people find you on the internet?
Or you can find me at AOBroBro. You can listen mm-hmm. to The Male Gaze, a podcast for sensitive men. Talk about current events and have women guests on. And then you can listen to The Dark Weeb, where me and my friend Cody basically talk about anime and video games every once in a while.
Sick. So check it out. Available where all podcasts are sold or given away for free. Frogcast@gmail.com. Email us any questions, comments, concerns, or corrections if you want to tell me I said something wrong or didn't get a fact right. I will say we did go through this whole episode and not learn what the one-legged lady's name was.
Someone tried to correct us about the Peter Gunn theme from last week, and I'm pretty sure that I said it was written by Henry Mancini, which is a thing that you remember.
Oh, you definitely did. You would remember because your name is Mancini. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, correct us, but, you know, be right on your corrections. That's all.
Yeah, and if you correct us and you're wrong, we will correct your corrections.
That's right.
Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
Patreon.com/Frogcasts for all of the bonus episodes of the other podcasts we do, in which we just talk about movies. This is a pod yourself a gun alert. That's a thing I just made up. We now have pod yourself a gun shirts and merch and shit over on the Teespring store, teespring.com/store/Frogcast. That's where you get all the Frogcast stuff, but you can also get Pod Yourself a Gun stuff. So check that out, and we'll put a link somewhere for you to do that. Anyways, guys, this was a great episode. Thank you all so much. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Don't stop. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.